I'm Emily Thede, author of This Vicious Grace, coming in summer 2022 from Wednesday Books.
And I'm Anna, a teacher and a writer in the Queery Trenches.
And you're listening to Basic Pitches, where we...
Two basic pitches.
Break down the basics of writing and being a writer.
Twitter now has this, like, downvote button, and it's right next to the reply button, or the heart button is one of those, and I'm like... This is so stressful. Stop this.
Don't downvote replies. Don't downvote.
Don't downvote reply. Hit the bubble, not the down arrow. Oh my gosh. Well, if you haven't already figured it out, I am sitting down with Maggie Giles. Is it Giles?
Yeah. Or,
yes, I did it right. Because I wanted it to be Giles from Buffy. That's like, I'm sure, please hate on me if that's the 20 millionth time you've heard that in your life.
You know what? It's actually not a big one that people go to. Like, I have gotten a couple Buffy references, but most people don't even pronounce it right at all. So they don't make the connection.
Oh my goodness. I'm just going to hold, I'm going to put that on a little, like, over here on my shelf. I'm going to put a little trophy because I can never pronounce anything correctly ever. Sometimes not even my own name. So I'm really proud. Yay. Yay. Yeah, I'm glad I'm not a slew of annoying people.
Nah, I mean, honestly, I find it's actually funny because my real name is Margaret, but it's spelt really funny. It's spelt like Marguerite. So I'm always correcting people on like either pronunciation. And I know Giles, like people want to say Giles because they don't want to pronounce the J sound. So I'm like, it's okay. I will just correct people. I'm really bad with names. So I hope like if I'm relaxed with it, everybody else will be.
Right. I just assume everybody's like me and makes copious mistakes and is just trying their best.
Exactly. We're all just trying our best.
Right. And you have tried your best and done your best and you have a book coming out it already came out, right?
Yeah, it came out last week on April 19th.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, so exciting.
Has it been fun?
You know what? It's been a lot of fun. The experience itself has been kind of unlike anything else. You know, the world of COVID and everything that kind of happened after 2020 really allowed us to do this online launch that ended up letting my friends from all across the world be a part of it, which was awesome. You know, historically, we would have done an in-person launch the night of, and it just would have been local and only really people in the area. So I think it's really cool that we've been able to expand to these virtual opportunities so many more people can get involved. So that was really awesome, and it was a really great turnout. Our Zoom call did get hacked, so we had some people saying some poor things in the comments, and it was pretty funny because one of the people that got hacked was my best girlfriend, and she was mortified. And she's like, it's not me. I'm not typing those things. They're like, it's okay. And, you know, I didn't even see any of it. It was all stuff that was told to me after. But yeah, it was pretty funny when we laughed about it because I'm like, oh, of all people to pick, they picked like the sweetest girl who has literally been my best friend since we were 10 years old. And she was mortified.
Oh, no. That's awful.
I just play it off like, hey, I'm famous enough to get hacked. We'll just go with that.
Right. That also is a trophy for you on your shelf. Like you are high profile enough to be hacked, exactly. I guess. Were you hacked in COVID times for your book launch? Here's the trophy.
Kind of a big deal.
Please put that in your bio for everything ever.
Right.
So can you talk to me? I know nothing about the publishing of this book. You mentioned that in like before we started recording. Can you just tell me everything about it? Because I don't know anything. I'm excited to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. So the book is called The Things We Lost. It follows a woman in her 30s who's very unhappy and actually ends up going back in time to live an alternate past. And essentially the biggest difference and the biggest sort of twist at the beginning is that her unhappiness comes from this event that happened in university where a friend of hers died in a very mysterious accident. And now in her new timeline, her new past, this friend is alive 4 years after she should have died. So something in her timeline, that a different decision she made, changed the course of this woman's life. And so she's spending sort of all this time trying to figure out what happened. But as much as she wants to know, like, this is so awesome, her friend is still alive, she's also lost the life that she had. So she had a daughter, she had a husband, and now she's like, I really want my life back, but essentially to go back, I'm kind of wishing for this girl to die. And so there's a lot of deals with there. But it was, it's been a really interesting journey. I probably started writing this book about 7 years ago. I wouldn't say consistently. So maybe if we calculated, it probably was only a full 3 years.
Right.
But I ended up in a very kind of unique situation. I was doing all the querying that everybody, does to get the agents or to get the publishers. And I ended up signing up for this newsletter that kind of gave you info of agents that were tweeting stuff and all put it into one place. So if you wanted women's fiction or thriller, and I think it was called the New York Literary Agent, something like that. Anyways, it was really great. And it was this, and I get a weekly, I paid $10 or something. And I get couple times a month to get these updates. So
yeah,
that was actually how I found my publisher, through one of these blasts. And they just had a tweet that was perfect for my book. I'm like, okay. Didn't really look into them, which is a faux pas. You're supposed to research everything.
Right.
You query, but I was okay, let's give it a shot. And, then they ended up asking me for a full and then asking me for a phone call. And it all kind of happened, I want to say fast, but it really wasn't fast. It was about 3 months, but for publishing, if you know, that is fast.
Right.
And I kind of was I never really intended to sign with a small publisher. I always thought I was going to go agent and go big. And then I got on this phone call with them and they were just so passionate about the story. They were so open about everything. And I was I got a phone call being oh my God, I think I'm signing this contract. And it was crazy to me because not only are they a small publisher, but they were brand new. So I'm actually their first book. So we actually
came
together. So it's been a very interesting experience because, most people I feel I've spoken to that were starting off were really, really vague and kind of almost sneaky about, that I'm the first or that they're not, don't have all that experience. Whereas Rising Action, they were very open with everything. They kind of sent we're cards on the table, you are our first book. We will possibly run into some snags, but it's not going to affect you. It's not going to affect the book. It's not going to affect the marketability.
Uh-huh.
And so, it was just it was a very honest and open experience. So I think that was why I ended up deciding to take that route.
That's amazing. I don't think we've had anybody, I'm thinking back through my mental catalog here. I don't think we've had anybody who's gone this route. So this is exciting and new and really good information for our listeners. Can you tell us about that, the process of going through a small publisher? And also, I do want to talk about the book because I read the opening chapters and the nuance and layers, and then also reading the query letter of it, what it's about. I can see where these puzzle pieces are fitting, and it's very fascinating. So I want to talk about that. But first, the publisher. Can you tell us about that experience, how that was?
Absolutely. So my publisher, they're Rising Action Publishing Collective. They're based in Toronto, Ontario. They signed me back in December of 2020. So when they signed me, they're basically your book is sort of a women's fiction suspense. We think the best time of the year for it to come out is really spring, April. Teachers are getting off. This is sort of when all the summer reading comes out. But April 2021 is too close. So we will be doing a year and a half of work till this book comes out. And they're we have to be okay. It's going to be a long process. Realistically, again, anyone who's done the writing industry knows that once you get a book signed, it is a long process. So them to tell me it was a year and a half till publication, I'm like, yep, no problem. But yeah, it ended up being such an awesome experience. Because I signed with a publisher directly and not an agent, they do have all the rights to my book. So sometimes my editor works almost like an agent because they're also trying to sell our foreign rights and trying to sell our movie rights and that sort of thing. So it was pretty funny in our first sort of rounds of edits. She's like, I've literally not felt like your editor. I felt more like your agent, putting up a sell sheet, trying to pitch all these people. And I'm like, that's all right. Why don't you just start being an agent and you can do that for me too. But it's been such an awesome process. We did 3 to 4 months of developmental edits on the manuscript, and it went through, you know, its copy editing round. We did sensitivity readers just to make sure everything, all the representation was all right and everyone was comfortable with it. And then we sent it off. We did our ARCs. We got our early praise, which was awesome. And it's just been a really cool experience sort of being able to work with a small publisher, because I think a lot of the behind the scenes stuff that happens with bigger publishers and authors don't really get to see, I've gotten to experience a lot of. Yeah. One thing that I do struggle with, which I'm sure we all do, is like the days of silence. I'm like, what's going on? Are they not working on my book? And it's like so funny because I've spoken to my publisher a few times about it, and they're literally like, just because we're not talking doesn't mean we haven't sent 100 emails and doesn't mean we're not working behind the scenes. And I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. I'm just neurotic. Right. So it's been great. Like, I think the experience of just like how open they've been with everything. And I think historically publishing has been a really closed door experience. And a lot of people don't kind of get the nuances and don't really get the intricacies of what's going on, you know, once the author's given the book away. And I think that's been a really cool part of working with a small new publisher, because I've been really involved in the processes.
Yeah. I think that's really, really important to kind of note here is that, like, the reasons for pursuing different paths of publication. I think some people tend to have this idea, you know, we've all heard the whole like thing of like, oh, the querying isn't working, why don't you self-publish? And it's like, it's not that easy. That's a really hard route. And like, I don't know, I think people tend to knock different routes of publishing based on what they want. And I think each has its own merit. And I see that with this one. Like, do you feel like you have had a deeper hand in the process as well? Like a deeper hand in what happens to your book?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when I gave them the book, I sort of was like, I've been in this industry long enough writing, I've been pitching enough that I knew that as soon as I signed the contract, realistically, the book was out of my hands and I've given it away. I've sold it. So if somebody wants to make changes to it that I disagree with, ultimately, I don't really have a say. That being said, my publishers were super open about collaborating. I really don't think they did anything to my manuscript that I was like, oh, I really wish they hadn't done that. Because I think everything as you go through the writing industry and the process, you work with critiquers, you work with feedback. So I think you learn how to take the criticism and how to really argue or defend what you believe. And so I found that most of the edits and stuff that we did, if it was something I wasn't sure about, it was a conversation. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they convinced me, because I know that ultimately I've sold them this book. So they want to make it as good as they can make it. So I got to trust their vision here. Like, there's a reason I went with them. So, but I do think, you know, they were really open to working with me. I think it helps that I was their first author, because it really helped them experiment a little bit and how much they really do want to include their authors in the process. And I'm sure it varies from book to book as well, depending on, you know, the content and the people they're working with, et cetera. So it's been a really great experience. It's definitely a different route than I planned. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, you know, you don't get a traditional publishing job, you self-publish. You see that all the time. And I so respect self-published authors. Like, it is a feat. It is an investment. Like, people that self-publish and self-publish a lot are amazing and it's impressive. But I am so not confident enough to do that. Like, when I was publishing, I'm like, I need my champion. Like, I need someone who's like, you're good, you're doing great, we want to sell this book. So I'm like, whew, okay. That's right. I need the ego boost before I put it out there.
Right. And the amount of hustle that goes into self-publishing to make money to do, like, I don't have it. I don't have that bone in my body. I don't have that energy. I don't have it. And I totally agree.
I highly respect self-published authors. You know, I do think it's something that gets a really bad rap because, you know, it is direct to Kindle publishing. It can be, you know, anyone can go in and do it. But the authors that succeed at self-publishing are just like prolific, talented, like it's hard workers.
Right. Forgive me if I ask any questions that you're like, I don't want to talk about this or I can't talk about this. Please tell me. I am naive in all things. So you can just say nope. And then I'll delete it from the podcast. I'm very curious, like, where does it go from here with this book? So my goal has always been to get an agent, to be traditionally published. That's like what I want my path to be. And I haven't really looked into other paths just because I'm like, nope, this is kind of what I want. So tell me what's next? Like, what happens after this? The book is launched. Do you have another book with this same publisher? Do you jump back into the process? I have no idea. I'm very excited to learn.
Awesome. Yeah. So our next immediate step is we've actually sold audiobook rights. So we will get an audiobook for the novel in July.
Yay!
So July 5th with Dreamscape Media. So we're really excited about that. So that's kind of our next immediate. We'd like to obviously sell book film rights. That's on kind of my publisher. They do have film rights for the book. So they're the ones that are kind of going pitching, because obviously it'll benefit them when they get that. And, you know, same thing with foreign markets. We start selling to like Italy and UK and that sort of thing. So yeah, it's all about trying to pitch the book and get this book out there. It's kind of their immediate next step. I actually do have a second novel signed with them. So
nice.
I have my sophomore novel scheduled for publication of September 2023. It's 2022, right? 2023.
Yeah.
God, I'm getting all these 2020.
Time
all
is a
up.
Construct. It doesn't exist.
Oh, my goodness. I'm pretty sure it's still February 2020 pre-pandemic. So yeah, September 2023 is actually sometime in fall is actually my sophomore novel, which is more of a thriller side of things. So it's sort of a similar vein where The Things We Lost does have some suspense thriller in it, whereas my next book is more of a kind of straight crime thriller. So
yeah,
it's a bit different, but it was super fun to write. And they actually signed that book only a couple months after they signed my second, which was my first, which was awesome. So that's our next step. And then I have actually just sent them a third novel to review. So they have to decide if they want that one next.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's exciting though.
Yeah. So it's great. I mean, you know, I'm going to shout out my direct editor, Alex. And then there's also Tina, who is, those are the two publishers of Rising Action. And honestly, just after working with both of them on this first novel, I'm just like, I don't know that I can work with anyone else on my
podcast.
Like, I hope you guys like everything, and maybe you just need to publish all my work.
Just keep going. Just keep publishing. Keep churning it out, and I will keep churning it out. You will keep publishing, and we'll all be happy.
Exactly. So yeah, so I'm planning with them to keep pushing out books with them. I am a Canadian author, so I really love the fact that it's a Canadian publisher. I found a lot when, you know, and it's like a nitpicky thing, because I set my book in Toronto, and when I first was writing it, I had a lot of people in the industry say, no, you can't set it in Canada. Like, Americans don't want to read about Canada. They want to read about New York. They want to read about LA. And it's like, those are the markets that sell. And I'm kind of like, okay, well, Toronto is just like another big metropolitan city. So I'm like,
Right. Realistically,
if I need to change it to New York, I can. But I'm like, you know, I know Toronto and I live there and I have all these landmarks and stuff that I can reference. Whereas it's like New York, that'll take a little bit more research, which is fine.
Right.
So that was a big thing. I'm kind of like, I don't really want to change the setting, because I do like the fact that it is set in Toronto. And I just feel like not a lot of novels get set in Canada. I mean, we do get some for sure. So that was a big one. And then also Canadian spellings. I really like that I got to keep all my
U's. Yes.
So that's a pretty funny one too. Cause I was like, when I first did a big edit, I changed it to New York. I removed all my Canadian spellings and I'm like, it's fine, but it's not what I wrote. And then when I signed with my Canadian publisher, I'm like, oh my God, you guys aren't going to make me change
you
my spelling.
I'm
like, you get it. So
you
I do
it.
Love that. And I do love that I can set things in Canada with them, and they can kind of push Canadian fiction a little bit. So
it's been a
great pick, I think. We'll see how far it goes.
I didn't even think about, it's true. When I think about like the books that are in this similar vein, they're usually set in American cities or locations. And I've never even thought about like, it's not Canada, but like, I know for me in particular, it wouldn't matter. I'd be like, oh, Toronto, I know that. Okay, cool.
Well, and it's so fascinating too that you say that, because literally I have so many American friends and so many American writing friends, and I've said this to them. I'm like, this is industry advice I've gotten. And I think it's changing now. Like, this was also a couple of years ago. And they're all like, no, we want to read about Canada. And I was like, no, I know. And so many people, and I think it's just a generalized thing. They were just sort of saying, this is the market. This is what publishers want.
Right.
An American publisher wants to publish an American location and whatnot. So I get the sentiment, but it is funny because everyone I've spoken to and I tell them I've heard that piece of advice, they're like, no, we don't care. We want to read about Canada. I'm like,
how
well, you just,
funny.
Like, you just want to read about my Canada.
Right. How? That's so funny to me.
It is.
Like, I would have never thought about that ever. That's...
Well, and like, England's a big spot. London's a big spot. Like, tons of thriller books are set in the UK. And like, I love reading those ones. I love reading US ones. Like, so I think it is just a very biased opinion that was probably made like 10 years ago and has just sort of stuck in the industry. And finally, we're kind of like, no, the setting doesn't really matter as much.
They're just cranking out as much, you know. I think that's the thing with traditional publishing is they're cranking out as many books as they possibly can to chase some trends and to create some trends. And they know that works. So
yeah.
How funny.
It's so funny.
What a funny
thing. I don't want to change it to New York.
I want to keep it Canadian.
Like, I can, but.
I love that. So let's talk about this book for a little bit, because I read the first two chapters and it was so funny because I read the first two chapters and I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't follow what I read on. And then I read the full thing online and it's all about how she's kind of unhappy in this life. And then she realizes, oh, who's to blame for this unhappiness? And I was like, oh, I get the first two chapters now. That's really fascinating. Like, I was like, this is amazing. This is so good. I love this. Like, I love the concept of setting up this life and very, like, you do a very excellent job of embedding, you know, this unhappiness, right? Like, here's the thing she's happy with. Here are the things she's unhappy with. And there's like this very murky middle ground why. Right. It's very murky on why. And I think that's fascinating. Can you talk to me a little bit about how you like set this book up to get this almost speculative fiction twist thing going on there?
Absolutely. Thank you. First of all, I really appreciate that. And, you know, I have to say where this book kind of started, you haven't read the third chapter yet, but that's actually where the book used to start. So I actually ended up in a mentorship program with the Women's Fiction Writers Association. And I got to work with this wonderful woman named Tiffany, and she's such a phenomenal editor. And I was like, literally gobsmacked when I got her paired with her. I'm like, people pay this woman like hundreds of dollars to help them. And I'm like, oh my God, she's going to help me for free. This is amazing. Like, thank God. So we got to work on our first three chapters and our query letter and our synopsis, because she was helping me create my submission package. And I originally had the first chapter probably closer to the end of the book. And she kind of goes, why do you have it there? I'm like, I don't know. It's like the reveal. It's like, this is why she kind of ended up going back. And she goes, but what's the point of that? And I was like, I guess there's not really a point of it. She's like, I want you to move that to the front. And I'm like, okay, fine. I'll move it to the front. And then so we had that as the first chapter. And I'm like, okay, like, it works. Like, I can make this work. And then she kind of goes, okay, and I want you to take what you have as your third chapter right now and make it your second chapter. And I'm like, no way. That does not work. Like, I hate that. I really want my third chapter to be second. It makes sense with how the first chapter ends. I'm like, I really don't think it's going to work. And she's like, just try it. Try it. If you hate it, we'll change it back. And I'm like, okay, fine. So I start doing it. I start writing it. I start weaving it all together. And as I'm reading through, I'm like, oh my God, she was right. It's so much better. So it was really funny because I was really resistant, and I couldn't picture it. Like, she had this vision for these opening chapters that I just could not see. And I'm like, yeah. No, it doesn't make sense. Like, my third chapter, which was my first chapter, is like the intriguing chapter. It's the chapter that you're like, what's going on? And you want to know. And she's like, it is, but we don't know who your character is when we're reading this. So why do we care what's happening to her? And I'm like, oh yeah, I guess that's important. So it's a pretty funny process, because now that I've gone through that and I've really learned that from Tiffany, and you know, and I put myself into doing something I really didn't want to do, I think one, it really helped me be more open working with critique partners and publishers, because I'm like, I really fought hard against that, and I was totally I mean, maybe I wasn't totally wrong, but this did make it better. And I'm like, if I hadn't been willing to try that, I would have never realized it. So, so I'd say it's definitely been through a lot of support. I credit all of my readers, all of my editors. Like, this book was all okay when I finished writing it. It's amazing after all of this collaboration.
So,
definitely not all me. I definitely had my support group and my helpers, and I would not be with this book if it had not been for them.
Right. I think that's a big thing for us. Like, a lot of people we have on Basic Pitches, and for Emily and I, is just this willingness to try things. And it's been something that I've had to wrap my head around, because I'm such an outliner that I'm like, it has to go by the outline. And then I get there and it doesn't feel right. Or somebody will tell me, have you tried this? And I'm like, but that doesn't fit. And then I try it, and yeah, it's going to be a lot of work, but it works. Right. And I think books are made much like a child. They are raised by a community, right? Like, a community can help raise a child. A community can help raise an author. So I think that's amazing. Like, you never know what you'll find if you're just like willing to be like, all right, fine, I'll try it. And it may not work, but I think it does a really great job of being like, oh, I read the back of this book and this is what it's supposed to be. Okay. Cause then it is about that character of like, I don't know if I like this character. Oh, I get why I may not like this character. I get it.
I have had a few people say that they didn't like her at first. And she does grow on you a little bit. I mean, we're all imperfect. And my main character, her name is Maddie. I know, Maddie, Maggie. We've gotten that a few times. she definitely has a lot to learn. And I think she has to go through some unfortunate things to learn some of it.
Right. We have never had a women's fiction writer on the podcast before. So this is exciting. Again, another thing I literally know this much about, and it's zero. I'm holding up my hand and it says zero. So I know nothing, literally nothing about. Can you talk to me about writing women's fiction? Can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, what, anything, because I know nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So when I first started writing, I did not realize I was writing women's fiction. I started with writing actually what I would say was historical fiction. It was a novel about Anne Boleyn and her sort of journey in her life from becoming queen to getting beheaded.
You know,
casual, breaking up a marriage, really fun. It's a really,
I love her.
I'm a big fan of her. So it was a passion project for me. But as I started getting people reading through it, I kind of was like, oh, I'm writing historical fiction. But then I realized, I am writing historical fiction, but I'm writing historical women's fiction, because it really focuses on Anne's journey and how she changes from this very naive person to almost jaded, but like, she's very peaceful in her death, because she kind of realized there was nothing that she could have done, and this was the life that she lived. And you know, and so there was a lot, there was this emotional journey that she went through, which really is the focus of the book, rather than the history and rather than the specific events that she goes through. It's really how she changes as a character. So as I kind of was writing this, I joined a women's fiction group on this website called Scribophile, which is like an online critique community. Mm-hmm. And in there, I learned that there was this brand new women's fiction association called the Women's Fiction Writers Association, and they were doing a contest called the Rising Star. And basically, it's an opportunity for unpublished women fiction writers to get feedback from published authors, and the top five end up in a showcase in front of agents.
Nice.
So I was like, okay, cool. Like, I'm writing women's fiction. I'm going to give this group a shot. It was like $45 annually. I'm like, let's just try it. So I hop in, I submit my manuscript. I did not make top five. My manuscript is not ready for that. I was still a very novice writer at this time. And it ended up being just such an awesome group. And I joined, they kind of launched in September, and I think I joined in about March or April. So they were brand new when I joined, still quite a small membership. And the reason that they sort of created this was all the founders were RWA, which is Romance Writers of America members. And often women's fiction has been grouped underneath romance writers. And that was one thing that they all wanted to do. They wanted to step out and really define women's fiction as a genre, not as a romance genre. Yeah. And so that's where it's like, if you get to RWA, they kind of say they classify women's fiction with like about the journey, but with like a positive romantic element.
Uh-huh.
Whereas we at Women's Fiction Writers Association, we actually just define it about the journey. And it's really focused on your main character's emotion and how they progress and how they change. And this can be in any sort of subgenre. It can be romance, it can be fantasy, it can be thriller. But the focus is, as much as there are those elements, the focus is really the main character, who they were and who they become. Mm-hmm. And so that was a big thing of how we've really defined this genre. It's an interesting one because we get in a lot of, you know, conversations, arguments. It's like, why does there have to be women's fiction? Like, men's fiction is general fiction. Why isn't right. women's fiction general fiction? And you know, there are some times that I'm like, I don't love the tag because it does sort of pigeonhole you a little bit. I mean, I have lots of men that read my novel and enjoy my novel. And, but you know, they're like, oh, we're reading women's fiction. Like, so it is right. an interesting label, but I mean, I like to wear it pretty proud. Not everything I write is women's fiction. Like I said, I do have the thriller coming out.
Yeah.
But I just have found that being part of this organization has been a huge influence on my writing, and also really understanding how to tell a character-driven focused story rather than it's the plot and things are just happening to them.
For sure. No, and that's what it sounds like to me, because I don't read a lot of women's fiction. I don't research it. It's not what I write. So it's totally out of my wheelhouse. And just from what I read and what you've described, it seems very character-driven. Like, it is very much about character. Would you say that's true? Like, women's fiction is generally, like you said, it was about the journey, right? And that to me says character development, character development, character development. We're taking this character from point A to point B, and the plot itself takes backseat.
Yes, I would definitely agree with that, because it's really, really focused on, okay. you know, how what choices your character made. Like, perhaps if she had made a different choice based on her personality or her emotion at the time, it would have been a different outcome.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. I like that a lot, especially as someone who's learning to be a more character-driven, you know, fantasy writer. That is such an important thing. So maybe it's like, I've heard before, study romance to write character-driven things. And I think the same thing can be said here, like read women's fiction. And I don't know how I have trouble saying women. It's like my mouth has never said that word before, but it has. Women's fiction. Maybe I should start reading that. For character development, because that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit the scope of this story? Hurts my brain. because to me, it seems, and you can check me if I'm wrong, it seems to me like you have to tell two different stories in one. And it's, we had a podcast earlier episode about a fantasy, a middle grade fantasy, where we talked about Tolkien, J.R.R. Tolkien would build worlds to destroy them. And it seems like you've done that with a person's life. You have built this marriage and these children and this life that, you know, she is living. And then you're like, what if I destroyed that? But then she remembers it. And that, you know, like you're playing with that. Can you talk to me about structuring that, building that? How did you get there? Because this is a scope beyond my thinking.
Totally. Yeah. It was definitely a challenge. I'm not a huge linear writer. I do tend to write out of order, and I do tend to write multiple stories going on at once. So like, for example, my sophomore novel follows three different points of view that are kind of happening all at the same time. And they do have to tie together. So it's a challenge at times, but I think the biggest thing with this particular story is I actually wrote it originally with just Maddie's new life. There wasn't the second storyline. And the reason I actually ended up adding in what becomes her past chapters is because I had feedback from a top agent I completely respect and adore, Erin Numata. She is literally my dream agent. And she gave me an R&R. She obviously did not end up taking the book, but that's okay. I understand why, and the book's way better than when she even read it back then. But she gave me the R&R, and she said, you know, I want to see more. Like, I want to see what her life was like before. I want some comparison. So I had this full novel written about all of her past life, and I'm like, or her new life, and I'm like, okay, I have to go in and add some past in there. So I start writing all these other chapters to reflect her old storyline. And, you know, and I have to go through and make sure that any references and stuff I make in the past reflect the other story. Yeah. But after I did that, I basically had written like another additional 40 to 50,000 words. And I'm like,
wow,
now I have this book that's like 130,000 words long. And I don't know what to cut.
Right.
So I had some amazing beta readers that I literally just threw the book at them. And I'm like, I need you to help me cut 40,000 words.
Right.
So they were great, you know, and I told them they had to be brutal. I'm like, I don't care if you hurt my feelings. Like, I don't care if you tell me something like three chapters are completely useless. Just tell me. So they had this one section where I had these two back-to-back chapters that I loved. And they're like, okay, these are great chapters. They're beautifully written. One sentence from each chapter matters to the story. I'm like, okay. So I went back and so they highlight those sentences and they're like, you got to put these in somewhere else and you got to cut these chapters. And I'm like, okay. So it was hard, but you know, it really did help me with that critiquing practice and really killing your darlings, as we say in writing.
Right.
So it was tough, but you know, it ended up being like a really awesome exercise. And you know, at the end I did have these two quite established storylines, but they are very similar. So I have had some readers get a little confused, which I tried really hard to make it as obvious as possible. But it's actually funny because when we did our edits, there was so often that I was having her in this new life be like, oh, in my past life, in my old life, in my former life. And the editor's like, okay, you literally have in my something life 100 times through this manuscript. We have to figure out how to say this differently.
Right.
And I'm like, but I'm like, I need to make it obvious that it's
right. Old life. How confusing to write.
But it was fun. You know what? I've had some readers that, like, I had an early beta reader that read a couple chapters and she's like, I can't read stories that aren't linear. Like, it's not that your writing's bad. Right. It's not that the story's bad. She's like, I just can't follow it. Like, that's just my style. And I'm like, nope, I totally, totally respect that.
Right.
And, you know, and I know that the storytelling is not going to be for everybody and it's definitely going to be confusing for some people. But I think that's the truth with any sort of novel that's written, right? Like, there's some things I put in there that my beta readers are like, oh, I got it right away. And then like two other beta readers are like, I don't get it. What's happening here? I'm like, okay.
Right. It's that whole thing of you could write the same sentence and have three different people read it and you have three different interpretations of that sentence. Exactly. It's one of those things. Yep.
Exactly. But I mean, I've definitely found that I enjoy writing a very disjointed story, and I really do enjoy kind of keeping people in suspense. I had some, you know, some friends when I was reading that they'd be like, oh, we'd end a now chapter and then we'd go into a then chapter, but we want to know what's happening. So we're like flipping through the then chapter.
Yes.
Get to the next part. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, you might find that with a couple of my books.
Yes. we recently had an episode where we talk about points of view. People were asking about like why multiple points of view and how would you do multiple points of view? And one of the things we talked about was like keeping people in suspense with one point of view and then being like, whoop, now you got to get through this next point of view to figure out what they were thinking. And I think that's the mark of a really good story that does different points of view or different narratives where you're like, no, I need to go back and learn about that thing. Wait, I have to read fine. And like, you know, and then they get the same thing with that next point of view. They're like, but I want to know about this thing. And I think that's fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's honestly one of my favorite things reading too, is I read like a good suspense book that has like three points of view in it and somebody ends and I'm like, okay, like, can I skip this chapter, read the next one? Okay, fine. Just keep reading.
Right. It's all about getting them to turn that next page. I love it. I love it. I think about, this is like not women's fiction at all. It's quite the opposite, but The Witcher season one had that alternate, like, you know, people listening, if you haven't seen it, it's alternate. You don't know where things are happening in time at all. And I loved it. And then season two came out and was like, nope, it's totally linear. And I was like, I'm so bored now. But everybody else was like, I love season two more than season one. And I was that rare person who's like, can I have that one back, please? Because that was much more entertaining.
Well, and I do love that. I think it's one I read recently, Station 11, Emily Mandel. She, the way she tells that story, she's so subtle with all of her storytelling. And so there were so many things that as I'm reading it, like I'm not like a huge sci-fi reader, but this book I got into, I guess it's kind of a fantasy sci-fi. Yeah. I got into it and I'm just like, I couldn't put it down. And for 3 days I'm reading because all of a sudden I'm seeing something in one point of view that's based in the past that now I know in the future in another point of view. And I'm like, crossing like all of the spots. And I'm like, oh my God, it's all making sense. And so it's funny because we did it for our book club. And when we sat down in the book club, I'm like, oh my God, all of these things that connected. And a couple people were like, I missed that. Like if I'd got that, then I would have been so much more invested in the book. And I'm like, oh my God. Like as soon as I saw that, I'm like, I have to keep reading.
Right. Oh, I love that so, so much. It's so fascinating. Another one is, if you haven't read it, I know, like you said, sci-fi fantasy, not a big thing, but, N.K. Jemisin's Fifth Season, I had a similar thing where it was like, it's three different points of view, three different like tenses as well. Like things are going wild in this book. And my husband and I were reading it at the same time. So we did a chapter a night and there were things that I picked up way early in advance because of the way it was told. And once we kind of got through it, I was like, did you notice this thing? And he's like, oh my gosh, that changes everything. Like, I think that's such a mark of an interesting, well thought out alternate storylines, alternate points of view thing. And I cannot wait to see that in your book. Like,
thank you.
It's fascinating to me.
Well, and I think what's so great about stories like that too, is those are the ones that you reread because the second time you read them, you pick up on more or you notice something that second time around that you're like, oh, I didn't read that part before. And, you know, and it's something more and more I've been noticing, especially as I critique. And so I actually read a recent debut novel. It's called One Little Word, and it's by Audra. I always pronounce her last name. Audra McClay, I believe. McClay, I think is her last name. I pronounce it wrong every time. I'm sorry, Audra, if you listen to this. and she wrote this thriller, and at one point in the novel, something kind of happens. One of the things, the characters say something, and my critiquer brain goes, wait a second, he wouldn't know that. Like, why would he? How did he? And then so I'm like, that's something I would have flagged to the critiquer. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe it just got missed and I keep reading. And then the reveal happens and I'm like, oh, that's how he knew. And so, but it was like crazy because as I'm reading it, like I would have flagged another critique and I would have been like, oh, he wouldn't know this, or oh, he wouldn't know this. And then until that reveal happened, I'm like, oh, now it makes so much more sense.
Oh, that's fascinating. Gosh, there's so, to get to that point, that is so layered. That's such layered writing. Like it has to go through revisions. It has to go through layers. That's, and I think that, I don't know. I think that's the thing I get from your book is that it will make you feel smart, right? Like when you figure it out. I love books that make you feel smart. And I think we've talked about it a couple times. The idea of things are being cliche, or like if people can pick up plot twists, like you're like, oh, I knew that would happen. There's a difference between like, this is what's going to happen, and like, I knew that would happen. You know, the whole like reveal, like it makes you, there's a big difference, and it's all about leaving breadcrumbs to make you feel smart when you figure this out.
I love that. I think the biggest thing, like I still to this day feel great about Gone Girl. And I was reading Gone Girl, and I don't know, spoiler alert if anyone has not read it. I knew kind of before we get to the second half, I'm like, she's not, like something's like, she's not dead. Like she's around. And then as soon as the second half reads and she goes, oh, did you like the journal me that I made for you? I'm like, I knew it. But I was like, I was obsessed. And so I was talking to my girlfriend about it, and I'm like texting her while I'm reading. I'm like, she's not dead. And then I get to that part and I'm like, she's not dead. And my girlfriend's like, how did you figure that out? I'm like, I don't know. It was like something about what she was saying just seemed so fake.
Right. Oh, I love that. So I love those kinds of stories so, so much.
Yeah. And it makes you feel smart because I'm like, haha, I figured that out.
Right. Oh my gosh. Okay. So I remember my question. Not really. We talked about it. And then Maggie is very kind and helped me, you know, find my path. So point of view is very important for this book, especially it is told in first person point of view, correct?
Yep.
Which seems very important to this particular story. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I chose first person point of view for this story because I knew I was going to focus directly on Maddie and her experiences. And I really did want to have it kind of completely organically her story and how she told it. So it's really focused on kind of her almost being unreliable because she only knows so much. And especially in this new life, she really knows nothing. So you're kind of as lost as she is, which is why I decided I wanted to focus like directly on her. I also find the first person point of view, I know some people don't love it. I personally really love it. I find it a really, really great way to really get into your character's head, especially if you only have one character that you're focusing on. I do understand the struggles of more points of view in first person, but definitely for this one with just one person, I tend to go into my first person if I'm just going to focus on one POV.
Yeah, I also love the idea of bringing up an unreliable narrator because we really haven't talked about that. And first person is a great way of having your unreliable narrator because as a reader, you're just strapped into whatever they're thinking is the truth. Mm-hmm. I'm getting excited because I'm thinking about your book and how that can work. Like, this is her opinion of people and this is her opinion of things that have happened. And we just kind of sort of trust that, or we dislike her because of those opinions and we don't really know what the truth is. That's fascinating. So next book, first point of view, you have three different points of view. What are you doing there?
So for my next book, I actually did go into third person. So I follow three characters in my next book. It's, an heiress, a sex worker escort, and a detective. And so it's three very different points of view, three very different lifestyles, you know, likely backgrounds. So it was interesting for me because I always thought, you know, to get really close to a character, you have to write first person. That's not true. You can do third person close. So that's sort of the way that I've really worked on the next one to just be able to expand and share their stories. I find, you know, when you get over one point of view, even two points of view is okay, but you get kind of into the three multiple point of view, it gets harder to follow when it's I all the time.
Yeah.
So it really helps to kind of use he and she and their names and that sort of thing in the writing. So it was, I think, you know, point of view is a very, very interesting idea because you can write a story completely different by just changing the point of view. And it's been something that I've experimented a lot over the years where I've written a story and then I've had someone be like, well, I think you should try and tell it from this point of view. And I'm like, oh, okay. So it's like kind of an exercise to be like, okay, now I have to take everything that they were maybe a secondary character in this scene and swap it so that it's their focus and their ideas and their thoughts. And so it's a really great exercise to practice both. I think it's about finding kind of the right story or right way to tell a story.
For sure. For sure. I think that's the thing is the more I learn about writing, the more I learn about craft, the more I learn that it is just how the best way that you can tell a story, not the best way that you can write pretty sentences. Right. I used to be so consumed by writing pretty words. And now it's like, well, the words will come, like the words will be pretty later. You have to get them engrossed in a story. And sometimes you have to make decisions on like, this is the clearest way that I can tell you this story and get information across to you. And that's very smart. Like that's very intuitive.
I love that. And I mean, and you know what I think? I love that you also say that about the pretty sentences because I was the same way. I'm like, oh, I need to write a sentence that someone's going to pick off the page and be like, this was amazing and inspiring. Right. And like, this is just the beautiful writing. Whereas I think, you know, now that I've written a lot more, there are times that I write a manuscript and then I go through and edit and I go, ooh, I wrote that. Ooh, that sounds nice.
Right?
I'm like, was that me? Did somebody come in and write this while I wasn't paying attention?
I love that. I love getting to that step in the process where you're like, I did this?
It's such a fun process because, you know, you see those comics that it's like, the writing, it's like, oh, this is so good. No, this is trash. Oh, this is amazing. No, this is, nobody's going to read this. Like, and it's all these ups and downs of this like crazy insecurity, imposter syndrome that we all have. But it is so accurate because like there are times that I read my book and I'm like, I love this. It's so good. Everyone's going to love it. And, you know, and I, even like so my second book that my publisher signed, my sophomore book, my editor could tell you literally the day before I sent it to her, I'd like read through it. I'm like, this book is trash. She's going to hate it. The twists are obvious. Like nothing's interesting. I'm so bored.
Right.
And then I'm just like, and so I'm texting my best girlfriend because she's read everything. And I'm literally like, I'm like, it's such a bad story. She's like, it's not a bad story. I'm like, yes, it is. It's garbage. Like, it's not interesting. The characters suck. Like, I'm ripping it apart. And she's like, Maggie, you're being crazy. You've read this book 100 times. Of course, you're not surprised. You know what you're reading. So I sent it to my editor and she comes back with like the most excited response ever. And I'm like, oh, okay, so the book's okay.
That's like,
it's like, it's so crazy.
It's the importance of that community, right? It's the importance of, especially when you're selling a book, it is the importance of having the people who are selling that book be excited for it. I think that's the one thing that I've really picked up is whoever you're working with, whatever path you choose, you have to have that excitement. You have to have those people who are excited for you, whether they're the publishing industry or their friends or their critique partners or whatever. It seems like that was so important to your journey specifically.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and it's funny that you say that because I can say going through the query process, it's really, really hard. And it's a really, really long process, as
the worst.
I'm sure you know. And, you know, and it's kind of peppered with a lot of rejection that you kind of start to get in this mindset that you're like, well, it doesn't matter who picks me. I just need someone to pick me. Like, I just need a yes. I just need that yes. And
yes.
That was sort of my mindset. I'm like, oh, as soon as somebody wants to publish me, I don't care. I don't care what they're like. I don't care what they think. Like, I just want the book published. And that's
right.
I would take whatever route. And so it really wasn't until I met Rising Action, I met Alex, I met Tina, that I was like, oh, I really understand this concept of like finding the right person to work with. Because, you know, it wasn't about that I just wanted someone to publish my book. Yes, that was part of it. But it was about that I'm like, I need someone to take this book and believe in it and
be
excited for it and, you know, be invested in these characters and, you know, be invested in making me, help me make it better. And, you know, so that's like a big thing that I realized. I'm like, yeah, it does only take one yes, but like you definitely want it to be the right yes. And, you know, you hear in the industry a lot of people, you know, parting with editors, parting with agents, just because, you know, maybe they didn't like the next book or it just, the partnership wasn't working anymore. And that's, you know, right. That's business everywhere you go. But I think, you know, it is a big thing. Like you get so exhausted with the query process that you're kind of like, whoever will take me. But when you kind of find that person that it makes sense and it was right, you're just like, okay, that's good. That's good. And, you know, and I have a really great relationship with my editors. You know, I feel very comfortable talking to them about any changes I don't want, anything that, you know, is really a hard no for me, which we did have a couple things. Like we had some that they were kind of like, what do you think of this? And I was like, honestly, I'm going to hard no that. I'm like, if you want to come back and tell me why you really want it that way, like I'm happy to discuss, but like, I'm not into it.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, they're like, okay, yeah, we get that. We understand your point of view. We get why you don't want it and what it doesn't do for you. So I think that's just, like, it's just a really important thing because, you know, we do work so hard on these books and they are our babies. And
yeah,
you don't want anyone to call your baby ugly.
It's so true. You need people around to be like, this is a beautiful baby. We love it. We're going to make it even more beautiful. It's going to be precious by the time we publish it.
A beautiful bouncing baby. Yeah. So it's a good,
a good analogy on the show. Weird analogies for books. We love them.
Don't want anyone to call your baby ugly. I mean, you can go find your act. Just don't do it.
Yeah, right. Oh my gosh. I love it. So Maggie, thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it. It's been wonderful to talk with you. Truly. I have giggled a lot. I have learned a lot. To close out the show, I will ask you, what is something this week that has brought you joy?
I love this question because last week we had a bit of a mix up with Amazon and they sent out uncorrected proofs of my debut to all our pre-orders. So it's okay. The story is right, but there are some typos that have been removed in the final copy. And it's been a frustrating experience. So we are still working with Amazon to get the fixes on the people that have already received the book, but we were struggling getting the correct copy ordered. I ordered a few copies myself and kept getting errors. So finally, we have a working Amazon link and the correct copy can be purchased and sent out. So now we are just working to correct the copies that have already gone out. So at least on the bright side, I have a working link and nobody's going to get the wrong copy anymore.
Thank goodness. Amazon, get yourself together.
Yeah, I mean, I've already tweeted Jeff Bezos. I have asked him to buy some copies to make up for it. He hasn't responded to me, but if anyone else wants to solicit him, please
do. I'm sure everybody will gladly hit up Jeff Bezos.
I think he can afford it.
And that's why people will hit him up. Like, come on. Not a big fan. Yeah. Shelve it out, buddy.
Yeah, so it was a struggle, but we're glad that it's on the way up and
good.
That one error has been fixed and now we just need to fix the ones that have already gone out. But you know what? Everyone's been super great. And like I said, the story itself isn't wrong. There's just a couple missing bonuses, like the reader guide isn't there.
Yeah.
And obviously the typos. I'd had a really, really embarrassing sports typo that makes me look kind of dumb. So that's the one I'm kind of upset about. But most people don't notice that one. So we're good.
Good. I'm sure people don't notice. It's fine.
The boys that
I'm
are
glad
reading
they notice. Got it fixed. Woo, thank
or
goodness.
The sports fans that are reading notice. But you know what? It's just one little typo, and you know we laugh about it now. But it was a little bit traumatic during the during the week of that's publication so when I found out the truth.
Oh no, that's so hard.
Yeah, but we're good now.
Yay! I'm glad. I'm glad that you can breathe a little easier this week.
Yes.
Well, Maggie, thank you so much for being on the show and talking with me. I super appreciate it. Is there any last second shout outs that you want to give before we say goodbye?
I'm just going to say thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. This was such a great experience. And, you know, I'll shout out my publisher one more time, Alex, Tina. I wouldn't be here without you. And also one last shout out to the Women's Fiction Writers Association. You guys are my rock and my community. And I am so grateful for all the connections and people I have met through.
That's so much joy. I love it.
Yay.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Basic Pitches, and thank you again to Maggie Giles for stopping by and talking about her book, The Things We Lost. You can find links to purchase the book in the show notes. You can find links to Maggie's social also in the show notes, and I will talk to you all next time. Bye!